This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You know, their lad's 10 yards offside. He's taking advantage of an offside position by coming and tackling Tyrone Mings, you know, and they go through and score, and that's what I don't understand. I don't think there's anybody in this stadium apart from the officials who believe that should have been a goal. You know, and after all the heroic defending we've been doing, you know, it's a really sorry way to, you know, concede a goal.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. The Aston Villa podcast that has no idea what the offside rule is all about nowadays. Joining me to discuss that and more, some amateur called Chris Bird.
Hello.
You do know you're meant to be silent when you record this show.
Yeah.
No background.
No ambience.
And if that's music, we could get done for it.
No, it definitely
isn't. Also joining us in that beautiful exotic island that is called Ireland, Northern Ireland, Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome back.
Hello.
Hello, you sound like you're on Mastermind.
What's your specialist subject?
So, hello. Right, starter.
Maybe it's because I'm so psyched up and tense after that game.
Come on, we've started, okay. So we'll finish.
We'll get on to that game in a little bit. Aston Villa have returned from their COVID-19 holiday. Most players, thankfully, we fielded a strong team as we could probably put out. And we'll get on to the actual game later. But it was good to see everybody was back. I think when Dean Smith mentioned that there was a player who said he was flying, and then, you know, 2 days later he was in bed with aches. I think that's probably Courtney House by the look of the team sheet, and also the fact that he was actually, in playing for the last few weeks, while Trezeguet, who admitted on social media he had COVID, obviously has been out for a few weeks anyway, so he wasn't exactly flying, was he? But good to see everybody seems to be back and ready.
And relatively fit and healthy, bar slightly off the pace, Ross Barkley.
Yeah. Right, coming up in the show, we'll catch up on the latest Villa news, and then we'll get into the 3 points where we discuss salary caps that was actually voted on in the Championship. We'll discuss briefly some of the things that popped up in a meeting I was in with Premier League Executive Director Bill Bush, and a heartwarming story as well over in Brazil. Then we'll get into the Manchester City game at the Etihad. We will save the overrated and underrated until the podcast, which will be a match reaction for the Newcastle game. So let's get cracking into this. Villa news, as we've just mentioned, it looks like Villa have come through the COVID situation that they were in, where 9 players tested positive amongst 14 staff. Apparently there might have been one or two others, but apart from Courtney Hawes and Trez, it looks like everybody is fit and well. That team sheet was pretty much bang on. I was expecting a few people, let's say, weren't up to speed, but grateful that everybody came through. In other news, Conor Hourihan has switched to Swansea for the rest of the season. Apparently, there was a few suitors after him once it became known that he wanted out on loan. Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth were up there. Swansea, second in the league. I think that's probably the best move he could have made, really.
I think so, and he has to play, doesn't he? You know, and he's deserving of game time. So
yeah, and it's a good wicket where you can actually have some success and stick another promotion to the Premier League and notch it on your belt.
Yeah, and Swansea are renowned for playing decent passing football as well.
It's been I think it's
going
a good
for
move
years.
For him.
There was two ways to read into this. One was, Hourihan wasn't actually getting in the team when Barkley was out with his hamstring. And now that Barkley was back, he certainly wasn't going to get in the team. So was he loaned out just because of that? Or should I say, were Villa happy for him to be loaned out because of that? Or was it because this rumoured move from Marseille of Morgan Sanson actually had some legs? We will soon find out. But it's a sign that there may be a incoming midfielder in that respect.
You wouldn't be sending Hourihan out on loan, I don't think. If you didn't have some kind of replacement in the squad, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, and whether you want to call that an upgrade, the thing is we've got a thin bench, especially now it's stretched out to 9 players. So just because he's not in the first team doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't have a part to play this season.
Yep.
Dean Smith picked up Manager of the Month for December, the first one since Martin O'Neill. It's basically been a decade of despair, has it not?
It's been grim, mate, yes.
Yep.
But deserved. I mean,
absolutely.
Could say we've had a softish December fixture list, but there was a lot in there, and normally December's a bit of a sticky month for us, so well done Dean on that one. I think we were just I think I mentioned in Match Club, we were just for real recognition across the football media, we needed to probably beat either Chelsea or Manchester United to like real rubber stamp ourselves as, let's say, European contenders and, wake people up. At the moment, they just think we're having a good spell without really reading into too much. But it's a good sign, Smith winning that. It shows you we are definitely going in the right direction.
Yes, very much so.
Also, after the Youth Academy, with hardly any notice, put up a valiant display against Liverpool. A couple of those chaps have gone out on loan. Dominic Revan, who captained the team, the centre-back, has moved to Weymouth, while Callum Rowe, who threaded through the pass for Louis Barry, has joined Hereford. Both are in the National League, I think. Hereford are in the National League North, but it shows you straight away. I mean, Dominic Revan, I think he's 20, Callum Rowe's 21. So these are the kind of players that really should have been knocking on the first team door. And as Purslow has said, the future of the academy wants to be having talented 18, 19-year-olds filling out the under-23s and, really putting themselves around. Once they get to the age of 20, 21, they should be making the grade. And the fact that these are going like lower non-league shows you the kind of level that we're at the moment.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you look at where our lads have been going on loan for the last few seasons, really, and it's not like we've had a player who's been sort of tearing it up in the Championship.
Yeah.
For example, like when we had Tammy Abraham on loan or Axel Tuanzebe and these kind of guys from Premier League sides. Admittedly, they're bigger Premier League sides, but nevertheless, Premier League sides loaning out players in the Championship, and they were tearing it up, and they're some of the best players in that division. We don't see anybody, or even like at League One level, really. You don't see any of our kids going, wow. I mean, the last one we probably saw do that was probably Grealish, to be fair, or someone like Callum O'Hare.
Yeah, but let's see what happens. The academy we'll see it fully where we're going in about, let's say, 2 seasons. I would think proper marker.
Well, you need to see more people like Jacob Ramsey and, getting first team minutes at 19 consistently now.
Yeah. I mean, he got on against City, which was another show of faith, considering how the game was poised at the time. Villa Ladies also played Manchester City and took a 7-0 beating, and they were 6-0 down at half time. And having watched the highlights, they deserve to be, because that's some of the most shambolic defending I've ever seen. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's not a case of, but City are like superior. It's like, you watch the highlights and get back to me. Right, on to the 3 points. First of all, the issue of salary capping. There was the motion for plans for 18 million salary cap in the championship next season. It seems to be dead in the water after half of the teams, I think, voted against it. Who was proposing this?
Well, the league were proposing it themselves, but the motion was torpedoed by an 8-page letter sent by basically Brentford, Bournemouth and Norwich that just picked apart the proposals. And one of their finance directors claimed they have found 30 ways to cheat the salary cap. He gave the example of how a club buying a player could discreetly pay the selling club a bigger transfer fee, and the selling club could then pay the player a termination bonus in lieu of any lower salary. So there's so many ways. It just hasn't been, you know, fully thought out. And if they did implement it, basically it means that the teams coming down from the Premier League are going to have an even bigger advantage every year over the teams that have had.
The problem with, I mean, salary caps is something I think should have been in the Premier League, a la the NFL, just to, and as another attempt to level the playing field. Unfortunately, it's something that you really needed when you formed the Premier League, as if it was like something new. That was when you should have brought it in. It's now gone so far down the line that it's hard, be very hard to implement such a scheme. But the fact that it's been thought about is, I suppose, a positive in terms of making it an actual competition again, this game of football. Although there's many other things that are ruining it, and we'll get onto those in a bit. Point number two, I had as part of the Football Supporters Association Premier League Network, we had a meeting, which was an unexpected meeting. Normally, we speak to the Premier League twice a season. This was an additional one because of the COVID situation. So we met with, over Zoom, Executive Director Bill Bush, who detailed what their thinking is at the moment with the pandemic and how like a vaccination transition season looks like. The main thing was, you know, if the season gets cut short, but you know, also how supporters returning is really being kicked back to autumn now. It's something that was on the table, let's say, at the end of last year. But now it's a case of if this season is cut short, what the situation is. And pretty much the Premier League are very much focused on it ending on the pitch. So they don't want points per game or any other system like that. And they said there's going to be a bit of a rough ride in terms of fixture rearrangement, as Villa will experience, considering we've just had a break of almost 2 weeks. Also, there was talk about the idea of curtailing goal celebrations as a way. It's more based on behavioural psychology, so people watching games don't think it's like one rule for footballers and one rule for them. And it also, you know, would be encouraging if you see footballers social distancing even when they score, that, you know, hopefully that would have a positive knock-on effect to society. But I speak for almost half an hour on the various details of this meeting on the bonus podcast Off the Record on the new My Old Man Said Patreon podcast channel that is now set up for 2021. So if you are a patron, do check that out. If you're not, then join us and then check it out. Right, number three, moving over to Brazil. Who's got the best Portuguese pronunciations here?
Chapecoense.
Chapecoense,
yeah.
Who you may remember as the team that lost almost its entire first team squad. This is like 4 years ago when they had that plane crash. When were they flying to Colombia, weren't they, for the Copa Sudamerica final?
Yeah.
Against Atlético Nacional, and 71 of the 77 people on board died. So it, you know, essentially took out a football club in a nutshell. This is like the Busby Babes, if you cast your mind back to what happened to Manchester United. And, you know, you have to carry on with a whole kind of fledgling team. An upturn in fortunes for them. They managed to get promotion back to Brazil's top division when they beat, is it Figueirense?
Yep, 2-1, yep.
2-1 to guarantee a top four place in Serie B and an immediate return to the country's top division. So their rebuilding is very much going in the right direction. So well done to them. Right, before we get into the trip to the Etihad, just want to say thank you very much to all the My Old Man Said patrons and all the patrons who have, after my recent messages, switched over to all the UK WhatBet based ones have switched over to to pay in pounds so we don't incur conversion costs. So if you are UK based and you've been a patron for a while, the last 4 months you could actually choose if you signed up as a patron what currency to pay in, euros, dollars or pounds. But if you've been a member longer than that, just check that you are paying in the currency of your country to make sure you're not getting any bank charges. But also thank you very much for the patrons who have actually signed up and paid annually to support the podcast and website. Thank you very much to Daniel Hayfield, who I didn't know if I gave you a shout out last episode, so this is a proper shout out. So thanks very much, Dan. Also, Matthew Allen, Tudor Richards, Omar Go, Luke Waymore, Hannah Ho Dalgleish, Jags, who, if you're in Match Club, you'll know who Jags is, Philip Sale and Richard Saunders. Thanks also to Alex Rayner, Philip Crowther, Andy Cooper and Craig Johnson for signing up, and also for Mr. Wilson for upping his pledge. I'll do some more shout outs during the podcast on Newcastle. If you do sign up annually, you do save 15%, which is 2 months, but any sign up is fine. You get access to Match Club, our get together on match days, and also the new patron only podcast channel featuring exclusive shows which will be regular. Me and Phil Shure are working on one as we speak.
Ooh.
Which is non-Villa.
Ooh, controversial.
Do you need a break from the Villa? Sail in style to the tropics with Ulysses de la Cruz's.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Right, match reaction. When you saw the team sheet, I think that was the first win. It was just, right, we're back at the races here. It's going to be a tough month. We've got 4 games in 10 days. We've got 5 games in 12 days, if you want to stretch over to February as well. So the fact that everybody was fit, bar a couple of players who arguably aren't first teamers anyway in our strongest first 11. That was the first good sign. Then you've got the problems of we're going to be a bit rusty. But for the first hour or so, we were it was a bit of a cat and mouse game, wasn't it? Because they could have had a bag full. We could have scored. It could have gone out either way, even though they were the dominant force across the game in terms of possession. I mean, they ended up with 69%.
And, as they always do, though.
They had 28 shots, and it was like the Alamo stages, but we defended very well. And they also defended very well in terms of cramping our style when we got him on the counter, but you know, we still were up there with about 11 shots, and arguably if McGinn didn't poo his pants a couple of times, we could have snatched that game before the controversialness kicked in.
Yeah, you think, I mean, to sort of fast forward through the game, but you think with sort of 10 minutes to go, just before the opening goal, you think this has almost got smash and grab written all over it, because it just looks like it's one of those days for City where everything they touch just can't go in, and Villa have done everything to keep the ball out of the net, and you think, well, we're getting a couple of chances here. We might get one more big one. And at that point, you think we've missed a couple. You maybe fancy us to take it.
Yeah, we're taking their biggest shots, and they were starting to run out of ideas, City, because City have this favoured attack of, you know, a low driven ball right across the 6-yard box, just looking to tap in, and we were ready for that nearly every time. It was either,
and they didn't have a striker.
Yeah, because they were really well.
Mings or Konsa, and there's one instance in the second half where both of them slid in at the same time, and you know Konsa got it first, but if he hadn't, Mings would have got it there. So the blocks that Konsa and Mings put in were excellent most of the game.
As with both fullbacks, you know, both fullbacks got put under a lot of pressure from both sides, but they both stood their ground really well, especially Cash, who I thought was, you know, pretty isolated with, you know, with all due respect to Traore for his, you know, his great touch and his little breakaway moment. But for a long time, certainly defensively, he was with all, you know, he was kind of a weak link, and he left his man a number of times, and Cash was 1-on-1 or 2-on-1 sometimes. And he, you know, as always with Matty Cash, he dug in, stuck to the task really well.
City started off without a recognised centre forward, which I think was serving as well, because I mean the amount of blocks and everything we were getting, as Phil was saying, they were putting that ball in, but I thought we were going to get undone, because that ball, we were getting blocks in clearing it, and the ball was coming out to like the edge of the 18, and they'd have someone there, and that would be their pretty much the basis of most of the chances they had, especially in the first half. But their finishing, you know, let them down, or Martinez, you know, made the odd good save. But we seem to be taking the sting out of them, and when we attack with purpose, and Barkley coming back was something we definitely needed, but he was a bit hesitant at times, and you know, wasn't striking the ball instinctively, was taking an extra touch. What do you think of Barkley's return?
Just a little bit sort of rusty, which is to be expected, you know, of all the team he hasn't played in a while, and to throw him in straight away against City. I mean, I think Smith would have known before that game that, well, it's going to be a tough one, but I need him to get through 90 minutes here, or as close to it as possible, because I need to get some, you know, cliche minutes in the tank ahead of Newcastle. Especially now, you know, we've obviously lost McGinn for that game. I would imagine El Ghazi will come in, Jack will go in the middle with Barkley. It becomes quite an easy reshuffle, but they are going to need Barkley to get going through the gears quite quickly here.
You definitely, if you had to pick the order of games, the two
the
games
right way around,
coming
it?
Back, Newcastle on Saturday, this as the game to get up to speed. I mean, we didn't really set this up, but Manchester City are the informed team. They were top of the form table in terms of the last six games, and they were looking over the last few weeks as the team most likely to win the league. In that context, we're coming off a COVID break, so if you're getting that shaking off that rust, then certainly you would rather do it in this game, in a game where even if you played at your best, you wouldn't be guaranteed of getting anything from it.
They have definitely sharpened Villa up defensively. I think sort of attacking wise, we packed a bit of a punch, but I thought almost because we bypassed the midfield at times, I actually thought in midfield we never got a foothold in the game, which is always going to be difficult. Even though there's better teams than Villa that will go to Man City and won't get near the ball either. But I just thought we could never really get our foot on the ball. And it was almost when we just hit the ball into the channels and stretched Man City and pulled, especially Stones. You know, I think Watkins sort of pulled him out of position on a number of occasions. And actually Kyle Walker earlier in the game before he went off, Watkins was causing him trouble just by pulling him out in and out of position. And then Barkley was running almost beyond Watkins on a couple of occasions. There was the one where he was through, wasn't it? You thought if he either picks the pass to Grealish or whips it in the bottom corner.
Was that the 3-on-2?
Yeah, 3-on-2. Very frustrating. I think he had two, didn't he? Moments like that, and he just didn't quite look up to his usual standard.
And that shot, he was almost like trying to place it and be clever.
It was, you know, like a back pass, though, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Curling it out of, you know, the keeper's reach. But we're talking about a top keeper here, and an earlier shot there with a bit more mustard on it may have had a bit more purchase.
Similar to the Traore one a little bit later in the game. You know, Traore does all the hard work. It's a brilliant move from back to front. And then he sort of gets into position. You think, go on, bury it. And we just...
Was that when he did the fancy take?
Yeah, the fancy touch. Takes De Bruyne out of the game. Turns his man really well. You think, go on, then go and finish it now. You've earned the right. Done the hard work. Go on. Same with, you know, the huge McGinn chance.
He puts
chance
De Bruyne on his arse.
Yeah, he does. It's brilliant. I mean, I actually thought we kept De Bruyne pretty quiet. One thing I'm saying, certainly in the first half, I think it was a bit more like the Animo in the second, was everything Man City were doing was in front of us for the most part, and we reacted when they got in behind. It was a little bit laboured from them, and I thought, as is often the case with them, there was always one pass too many. Whereas actually Man City could have either pulled the trigger or just got the ball in the box if they'd have had a traditional sort of number 10, number 9 striker. They were almost trying to score these picture book perfect goals.
Phil, Villa's attacking intent, what did you think?
Well, I mean, this is where, like, Barkley coming back into the team, because he doesn't defer to anybody. That's the thing about Barkley. I mean, if Barkley's going to have a shot, he's going to have a shot, whether it was a weak one or the wrong opportunity or not. You know, you can accuse the other players of maybe deferring to Jack or passing to Jack when Jack's maybe not in as good a position or shouldn't be passed to, but Barkley's not passing to anybody if he doesn't want to. You need that in the team. I mean, where Watkins maybe isn't greedy enough at times, Barkley's perhaps the opposite. So it's just getting the balance right of when to shoot and when to put it through, because the one where he should have put it through to Jack, maybe he should have had a rattle then. You just don't know. It's, like I said, it's his first game back since the Brighton couple of minutes he had at the start, so it'll come again.
Yeah. Sure. Aston Villa made 10 blocks against City. Only Leeds against Liverpool on the opening day have made more in the Premier League. I think Mings made 6 in total. And he was having a great game.
Brilliant. They both were great. The back four in general, back four and keeper, had a crack. I mean, the save from Martinez as well, early in the game, where it kind of floats to the back post. I mean, he's got no right saving that. Their guy should be burying that.
And then the rebound, Cash and Mings managed to dig it out on the edge of the six-yard box, and they had a man straight in on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a brilliant moment in the first half as well, where Sterling was running a target just towards the end of the first half, and target just, it was almost like Bobby Moore's tackle in 1970, just sort of knelt down on one knee, and Sterling went on, and the ball just stuck to target, and he just walked away with it. It was just, he just completely shut him down.
Target was brilliant, actually, defensively.
An issue that I'm not totally happy about is when it comes to set pieces, especially set pieces around the box, we don't seem to have a go-to guy like other teams have, that you know 1 in 3 chances they're probably going to bury it. This time there seemed to be a bit of a discussion. It was either going to be Traore or Douglas Luiz. I mean, you're also thinking, you know, Barkley must be on that short list. El Ghazi sometimes steps up. He wasn't on the pitch. Grealish doesn't seem to be a free kick taker, even though he must have the ability. And Hourihane is now off in Swansea. So, you know, who do you give the free kicks to? Do you think Villa should almost like nominate a proper free kick taker?
You almost don't want to have to. You want one player who you know is going to go, I'm taking this. This is my responsibility, and I back myself.
You know, like for example, when Ronaldo's in the team, you know if they get a free kick anywhere,
it's just his, isn't it? Or Messi, or
40 yards, he always takes it. But we don't seem to have that clear conviction. It's almost like, oh, it depends what position we're in and who's in the mood for it. You know, like if Grealish, maybe it's not his forte, but Grealish does maybe not delegate so much and just say, right, I'm taking it. But you know, you can see why he wouldn't. But Douglas Luiz showed he had a good shot in the early days when he wasn't very good for Villa, and since he's been good and doing his duty, he hasn't really shown much in that area.
This was the first game against City where he had a shot on target that I can remember since last season.
He had 2 or 3 good efforts, didn't he, actually, in the game?
Yeah.
No, but just what you're saying, I mean, the only time I've seen Jack take a free kick was against Wolves. That's the first time I've ever seen him hit a free kick, and he was pretty close. I mean, look at the difference a Ward-Prowse makes to a Southampton team. If Villa had a player that had that sort of delivery.
At Leicester. De Bruyne had about 3 corners in the first 10 minutes, and they were all absolutely on a postage stamp.
So this is something that is perhaps a weakness.
Maybe that's what the new guy, if they're thinking the new guy who's coming in might bring, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack takes the indirect free kicks, doesn't he? When there's one on the right-hand side, he tends to whip it in and pull it away from the goalkeeper. But in terms of a shot, you'd almost like to see him take responsibility on them.
What I haven't brought to the table is some of our dire attempts at free kicks as well, which are, you know, wasteful. And when you're playing teams of this, you know, we're talking about the top 4 or so teams, and you get set pieces, you've got to really capitalise on these chances.
Well, you've got to make use of any opportunity you get in their half. A, because it's a chance to take a bit of, you know, pressure off your defence. And B, you don't know when you're going to get to be back in their third. You know, you have to be really efficient
So what's the solution? Because I thought Barkley would be the main man, or Grealish, but here we are with, you know, with a very good opportunity. It's right on the edge of the box, and you've got Luiz or Traore setting up for a left or right, keeping the keeper guessing until the last minute.
Unless maybe El Ghazi's the only one who fancies it, and he's not on the pitch at the time.
I think he seems to be our penalty taker as well. So
I think the problem is you probably have a squad of 7 out of 10 free kick takers, and you need you need a nine. And
We don't have one specialist, do we? And the one we did have, in theory, is now playing in the Championship.
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Let the keeper take it. He seems to do everything else pretty well.
Let Martinez take it.
Fancy a crack? Yeah, why not?
First goal.
Oh, God. What a fucking shambles.
Now, I've seen this situation where the linesman just flags it. When the player's running back, he flags.
Yeah, and then now, it's up to the referee.
Yeah, and if the team has control of the ball, like, well, do you know what? Fine, if you want to play on, feel free.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is a bit of, well, I could blow and give you a free kick, but actually you've got the ball now, and why stop play is one of the things. Also, you've got VAR in the background, so you're thinking, well, you know, I didn't need to do anything here. But then Mings fails to control it. What is the letter of the law here? The thing is, even if the letter of the law says that he's in the clear here, it sets up this loophole. And I think Michael Owen pointed it out. Why, you know, your striker doesn't have to run back to get onside. He can, you know, do a bit of sportsmanship there and just sneak in on the blind side.
It's, I mean, where do you...
Everybody was speechless. Like, everybody was speechless.
I mean, if you profit from that, you're thinking, well, happy days.
But when you compare it to the decisions that have came before, it just makes the whole thing, again, look farcical. I mean, Wesley's heel being offside against Burnley last year, the ball was headed out by a Burnley defender. So does that mean that Wesley's sort of, the phase of play is gone again? So there's a touch by a Burnley defender?
Yeah, or like, you know, Ollie Watkins's toe, or there's been so many decisions, haven't there, that have gone that way. And I know... The counter is always going to be now with Villa morally that, oh, well, you're only even in this division because of, you know, the goal line technology failing. And that's the downside to it, that people will always play that moral card with Villa when it comes to...
It's not a moral card. It's like one incident that happened 40 minutes into a game that was like, how many games that followed that? It was about 10 games left in the season. It didn't affect the season. There's a table. If you take away all the injustice on VAR decisions last season, Villa finished 15th.
And this season, aren't we in the top four, if I remember rightly, in the VAR injustice column? It's ridiculous.
Well, I think we'd have qualified for Europe already based on some of the fucking decisions we've had against us.
Like I said, we should have won the league this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first one's farcical. The second one is one of those ones where it's frustrating. Under normal circumstances, it's very harsh on Cash, but does it hit his hand? Yes. Can you see why it's given? As annoying as it is, yes, because if that happens to you, you go, well, you've got to give it.
Yeah.
If it's in their box and it's not given, we're going to go mental.
We would go absolutely insane if that was not given as a penalty. So that's one way tribalism kind of dictates how
and
you think about
that. And it is harsh on him. Most people would say, well, yes, it's harsh, and what's he supposed to do with his hands? But that isn't his fault or the ref's fault. That's the rules.
Yeah, and it's just... almost, it's like the old school, before all this fucking grey area bullshit and reinterpretations came in over the last few seasons. Go back 20 years, that's a handball, that's a penalty.
Just to rub salt in the wound, if you go watch the Supercoppa game in Italy, Juventus...
Why would you do that though, Phil?
Well, no, this is if Juventus against Napoli, the exact same scenario happened in that game and it was offside. I mean, you couldn't get a more similar scenario and it was given offside. So it's just...
So you're talking about the handball? We're talking about the handball.
Italian refs are notoriously better than English.
you got to keep up with the pace of this show, Phil.
We've already finished.
We were talking about the offside about half an hour ago.
I haven't got over it yet, and I was doing a John Moss impression and keeping up with the game.
So, sorry, talk us through this situation.
There was an incident in the, like I said, in the Juventus and Napoli game where the ball's played through, and Juventus players coming from an offside position and just sort of nicks in and sort of tries to make a challenge against the Napoli defender. Referee straight away, yep, offside. You know, no arguments at all. It's exactly the same. It's the situation that's happened in football matches, sorry, since the dawn of time. And just because VAR has been brought in now, it's just how much more of a mess can you make of a situation again?
Not necessarily the counter argument is, but the argument from the ref, and I'm sure the Premier League is going to be, well, Mings has taken a touch. Therefore, in their eyes, it becomes a new phase of play. That's how they'll justify it, I think. Mings has taken a touch and then he's fucked up.
But there's also a situation where he's so offside from his initial situation that Mings hasn't seen him. Doesn't know he's behind him. If he knew he was behind him, then... But it's, as I said, you know, at the start, linesmen would flag for that normally. And it's because, Mings has taken the touch and it's like, well, you might as well let them play on. Why are you stopping the game and being pedantic? But, you know, get to Mings, it's that situation. If he doesn't lapse of concentration, if he doesn't miscue that, then that doesn't happen. It is an Engels moment against Spurs.
Yep. Yeah, it's frustrating. Considering, you know, when Man City have been peppering your goal, and to lose to that goal is equally frustrating. Admittedly, you know, when Bernardo gets the ball, he's still got a little bit to do, and he, let's be frank, absolutely rifles it past the keeper. It's a brilliant finish, but it doesn't stop it being frustrating.
In terms of, let's say, Mings's overall performance, he's done all the hard work and some.
Yeah, it undermines what is probably close to a man of the match performance.
But at the same time...
it's happening every week.
But the thing is, it's every week where we're getting into the situation where we don't know the laws. And I'm not just talking about us on the podcast. I'm talking about football per se. That these things are being debated almost as if they were, you know, subjective. And, you know, we discussed this in Match Club about the rugby situation where it's almost like forensic. They will go through a decision with complete transparency, everything shown on the screen. They talk you back and then they always ask that question, can you give me any reason why that isn't a goal? And then analyse it from there. Here, it's all smoke and mirrors and...
it's arrogance, isn't it? It's the arrogance of football. Oh, we couldn't possibly be wrong because we're the FA.
Well, it's the football in general, but there's also, you know, it's getting suspicious now. It's like, well, is there some kind of, you know, conspiracy here that, well, not maybe even not a conspiracy, but a favouritism for sure, because we see it all the bloody time. I mean, how many times do Manchester United need to get penalties? We know they train for it, as we would be lying that most Premier League professionals don't know how to get a penalty. It's part of the game. I mean, McGinn got a free kick in that game, he played for it, but... The amount of these, you know, the amount of decisions that are almost like weird grey decisions, and they're just hoping that time is the factor and fans will forget about them. And there's enough tribalism where you'll get fans like Leeds fans were, you know, coming on and defending it as it was onside. And I said to one of them, as Jags from Match Club recommended, I tell one of the guys or reply to them, if Pep had any decency, he'd have let Villa walk in an equaliser.
He didn't learn everything from Bielsa then, did he?
Exactly. There was a few lessons he still had to learn. But is that just hard luck? I mean, Manchester City win that game, I've got no problem with that, because they created enough chances to have won that. A mixture of valiant defending and poor finishing. At the other end, Villa, poor finishing as well, or not very decisive finishing.
Yeah, probably not decisive, because it isn't like their keeper was pulling off amazing saves or we were hitting the woodwork or anything.
No. I mean, we had opportunities to pull a smash and grab here.
We crafted some good positions, but we never capitalised on them. And to be honest, I don't think we deserve to win that game, but I think we dug in enough to warrant getting a draw.
Yeah, it's like you would have deserved a draw just from your endeavour there. Yeah, and obviously, you throw in the circumstances as well and, you know, it's a good story.
Hopefully they take the positives from it and they take that momentum into the Newcastle game, which, let's be frank, the way Newcastle play, it will probably be close to roles reversed, where we're going to have a hell of a lot of the ball.
Phil, what's your positives from this game?
Well, the positive is the need to use this like sense of injustice or anger or anything to sort of keep fueling themselves for the next one and on to the next one and on to the next one.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be easy for them to think the whole world's against them, and it's maybe Dean's comments in the match after or the aftermatch thing is it's not the beginnings of a full on siege mentality, but it's just like another one. You know, what more can you throw at us? You know, keep them coming. We'll keep going. It doesn't matter. Keep rocking on.
Because they've clearly got character. They've shown that this season in some of their performances and the way they've nicked wins at Leicester, Wolves, and places like that. So I just hope that they they get the recovery quickly for Newcastle, which I'm sure they will, and they just say, do you know what, we've we've gone toe-to-toe with currently the best team in the country. You know, could have deservedly got something from that game. And let's just throw the kitchen sink at Newcastle.
I mean, Smith said on the actual game itself, I felt we were sloppy today. We looked leggy, but that's understandable. And we did show some signs of quality. There was an awful lot of team spirit, which is what we're about. We made it difficult for them. Got some blocks and made some terrific clearances, but unfortunately we've been undone by two unjust goals. As we said, I can understand that the penalty, but I think the first incident adds a bit of injustice to the penalty, because you're just thinking, you know, this is typical. You kind of bulk them in together, but it's just the way you lose. It's we could have been 2 or 3 nil down at half time. We could have been a goal or two up at half time. But instead, we have to lose the most painful way possible by dubious rules and indecisive linesmen.
Which is a shame, actually. I mean, if you're a neutral, because actually it was a really, really good, entertaining game of football.
Yeah.
And for it to get decided in that manner is a real shame.
I mean, you had added extras, like some of the Villa sliding blocks and sliding tackles because of the wet surface were like Hollywood slide tackling.
Yeah, they were great. And the fact that Villa, unlike some of the previous times we've gone to teams like that, we did have a bit of venom in our attack. I mean, I think the game last year when we lost 3-0 there, we hit the post, didn't we? Or did we hit the woodwork twice? We missed a load of chances there last year as well. And let's be frank, yeah, our record at the Etihad is absolutely, it's about as bad as our record at Old Trafford. Manchester has not been a happy hunting ground for Villa in the last 20 years.
City scored that offside goal against us last season as well. And oh, lo and behold, out came the PGMOL again quickly to give another clarification. I mean, they may as well just set aside a designated press officer for clarifications in Villa games.
It's a good way to close the podcast out, I think, David.
Yeah, just one thing, one final. Tyrone Mings said, never even heard of that rule. Just let players stand offside, then run back and tackle you. In hindsight, I should have cleared it 100%, but didn't even know that was the case. Nonsense is what Tyrone Mings says about the situation.
Fair enough.
Yep, sums it up.
Going into the Newcastle game quickly, I think, as Chris said, it will be roles reversed in terms of possession. I think because Bruce is getting a bit of pressure, there'll be a bit of a siege mentality, park the bus, grind it out.
Yeah, this is a get it done how by any means necessary, because this is another one of these games like Brighton and Burnley, and there's been others that you just think, on form, you should go through these guys. Because let's be frank, we haven't won in four.
Yeah,
no, this is
the slump. The 15-game slump is on.
Rogers put it. Yeah,
needs to be reversed.
And I think because it's no one else plays over the weekend, we're the only game. You can get yourself, I think, back up to eighth or seventh. I think it's eighth. It will just calms everyone down and go, yeah, no, we're all right.
We need a couple. Yeah, we could do with winning a couple back to back actually to get us
just back where we probably should be, really. Because the table looks a bit glum, frankly, considering how well we've done, just because we're so far behind.
And that's the thing. It's all right having games in hand, but once they start to mount up, it's tough mentally to maintain the levels. As Wigan, I always use this example. Yeah. Wigan got to the end of the season when they were in the relegation zone that year. They won the FA Cup. The last quarter, they could literally beat anybody in the league. They were going great guns under Martinez, but it was just they'd left it too late, and they were playing like games a couple of days before the FA Cup final, a couple of days after the FA Cup final, and they just couldn't keep the mental
it's the highs and lows, isn't it?
Kind of drive and sharpness to be up for every game. And once you've got too many games, it is harder. Physically is one thing.
I think you can do that when you're Man City.
Mentally is another.
You can make lots of changes, can't you? You can switch 6, 7, 8 players in and still be strong, but very few teams can do that.
But yeah, but you'd always fancy the team with the points in the bank rather than the ones that have got like 3 or 4 games in hand. You know, one game in hand, no problem, fair enough, even two. But when you've got a few and you've got to play back-to-back, it is a harder situation. But anyway, it's good to have the big positive. Everybody is back, pretty much, and that's 90 minutes that we needed, and a real opportunity against Newcastle to get this Villa ship sailing in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Any closing thoughts?
No, just bring on the Newcastle game, really.
What did Mourinho say? I cannot speak or I'll get in trouble. So leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, we could F and blind, but we did that already before we started recording.
Fucking prick.
Right, anyway, at least we have Aston Villa back in our lives. So this kind of lockdown of aimlessly wandering around the house, wondering what to do, there is now structure back. And all we need now is that joyous feeling of winning. So until our next win, which hopefully will be followed by the next podcast, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Whatever it is you want, I'll give it to you.
Well, now that you mention it, there is something I would like.
What?
Your life.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.